broadcasting from the heartland of America.
In the Hoosier Media Network studios.
The next generation in conservative talk radio. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. What's up? Welcome into it. It is the Voice of Reason. I am Andy Hoosier. So great to have you for another weekend, man. We have so much to talk about. My mind's blown from this week. We got to decompress for a minute. We have to just decompress from all the shenanigans, the malarkey, as Joe Biden likes to tell us, from what happens on a weekly basis. So great to have you. This is the Voice of Reason. I am Andy Hoosier, broadcasting out of the heart of the nation in Wichita, Kansas, at the Hoosier Media Network studios. We are all over multiple radio stations all over the country. More coming on next week as well. Exciting. We'll have that announcement next week for you, plus our live streams and our podcasting and our TV broadcast. However you watch or listen to us, welcome aboard your millennial general reporting for duty as we do every single day. Follow us on our social media at Hoosier Reason. That's H-O-O-S-E-R Reason. And our website at HoosierReason.com. No I in Hoosier on either of them. I know there's an I in I, but not an I in Hoosier, at least in this Hoosier. So find us online on the social media and the website at HoosierReason.com. Coming up on the program, Wayne Weingarten. He is with the Pacific Research Institute. He's an economist. We'll have him on at the bottom of the hour to talk about the push in California. I know it's California, but nonetheless, the push in California for reparations, where they've talked about it for a while. It's been kind of a lingering conversation for years, but now it's gaining traction. What would that actually look like if we advocated for reparations in that state? If you remember, we talked about it, I believe, on this program a few weeks ago as well, that Missouri, also from one of their big universities, is advocating for reparations in the sums of like $300 million worth of reparations for blacks that built the university back in the early 1800s. Now they want reparations for it. I don't know why all of a sudden now, like, hey, now's a good idea. Let's go ahead and give it a try for now on. So we'll cover all that at the bottom of the hour and see where could this go. Is it actually a possibility that it could go through, and what would that look like not only for the economy, but for society as a whole? So we'll cover all that here in just a little bit. Obviously, a lot to talk about that happened this week, even up to the end when most of the media coverage got cut off. So we'd like to remind you, kind of the benefit of having a weekend live program talking about some of these issues, because it doesn't stop any longer going into the weekend. But first and foremost, let's get into our what's trending from the week.
It's your week in review.
As obviously we are trying to just recover and process the shenanigans that we heard from the State of the Union on Thursday night. Now, if you watched it, then I feel sorry for you. I had to do it, obviously, because it's my job. But if you didn't watch it, you really didn't miss anything. I've never in my life, and I enjoy a little bit of my more angrier music. I enjoy my yelling and my growling. That I enjoy that. That's my personal thing. Totally okay. I usually don't like it when an 80-year-old dementia patient is sitting there yelling at me about ridiculousness. That, to me, takes it to another level. He was yelling the entire time. Whoever gave him his steroids or whoever gave him his upper gave him too much. And he wanted to prove a point that he's still viable in this race. Now, we're not going to hear from him for the next 2 weeks because he's still in recovery mode, because you can only take so much of that for so long. But he did it, and he went over the top, and it was angry, and it was yelling, and it was the most ununifying thing that I've ever seen in my entire life. It's supposed to be as unifying as you can get. And again, the narrative has changed slightly over the past few years, where the dialogue has changed from the president, the commotion in the chamber has changed quite dramatically. But overall, things have evolved, or I guess you could say devolved, over the years, where really it started during the George Bush administration. Of course, you remember all the Democrats saying that, you know, we've lost our village idiot in Texas, and starting to make fun of him. Ward Churchill from Boulder University in Colorado was the first one to say that Donald Trump, or that George Bush was a Nazi and that he was Hitler. The Dixie Chicks, if you remember that whole protest, where then we had country artists or country music fans that were throwing their Dixie Chick CDs in the fire and burning them, and saying they're not going to listen to them anymore. And that was the whole movement. That's when the division started. Tony Snow, the communications director and the White House press secretary for the Bush administration, when he died from brain cancer, then the Democrats didn't say, oh, our condolences because it's only politics. No, no, they took it personal, and they're like, oh, thank God this guy's gone. The hatred really started about that time. There was always division before, but it was never that personal until about the Bush administration. Then we got to the Obama administration, and you had the big shock and awe when a member of Congress yelled, liar, in the middle of the State of the Union. Remember that? the first time that we ever really saw any type of pushback or protest from members of Congress in the chamber during the State of the Union. And to then even Republicans were like, whoa, that's unprofessional. Don't do that. How could you do that? Then you got to the Trump administration where the Democrats just did anything that they wanted to, and they abused and attacked Donald Trump during the State of the Union as much as possible. Then we had Joe Biden's State of the Union last night or a couple nights ago. And we had some, obviously some boos. We had the outbreak from Marjorie Taylor Greene, which, by the way, props to her. That was probably the win of the night right there, was her whole Trump get out. You're not even allowed to wear that hat in the chamber because you're not supposed to be campaigning during the State of the Union or in the chambers like that. She did it. She didn't care. I give her the win for the night. I thought it was pretty hilarious. But of course, the big issue that happened during the State of the Union was a grumpy old man talking about socialized programs, how the government's going to solve everything. And it fell on deaf ears, except unless you're in that echo chamber of the Democrats that actually enjoy that rhetoric. It was not unifying. It's not what a State of the Union was supposed to be about. And we need to realize that that was a campaign speech because, okay, I want to put it in perspective. Have you ever seen the movie? We watched this as family night on Friday night. We watched the movie Ants. Chad, you remember that one? A-N-T-Z, Ants, the cartoon where they were working in the colony and the one ant's like, well, I have different desires than being a worker and being a digger and I want to go do something else. And he stepped away and then the whole colony fell apart and they were angry at him because of it. Sylvester Stallone was the big muscled soldier ant and he was the one that swapped places with them. And it was, I enjoyed it. I had to bring that up and I told Mrs. Voice of Reason when we watched it on Friday night, I said, man, remember when cartoons actually had a good message to them? When it was about thinking individually and walking away from the collective and not being a communist utopia where you're doing everything for the people and how you're insignificant and you really don't matter because it's all about the colony and for the collective, which is what that entire movie's premise was about. Fight the collective. Find your individuality and fight against the system to be who you are and be proud of that. That used to be a good message back in the day. Now they're like, you're just a number with the tax and the IRS. Now you're just part of the LGBTQ or you're just part of the black community. You're not about the individual. You're about the collective in this little box that we've told you to with our identity politics. And if you don't fit along with that and you walk away from it, then you're a traitor. How could you do something like that? And that's what I heard from the Joe Biden State of the Union on Thursday night. And obviously one of the bigger issues was the immigration issue where I want you to listen to this really close. I'm going to play the clip and I know you've probably heard these already, but I want you to play the clip for just a moment and listen, because as he was having the spat back and forth with Marjorie Taylor Greene about Lincoln Riley, the girl that died, and she was say your name. And then he said Lincoln Riley, because apparently he had no clue what he was doing, that he says that how many legal immigrants have killed people? How many thousands of people have died from legal immigrants? I swear I hear illegal immigrants, which kind of disproves the entire argument that he's trying to make.
Lincoln Riley, an innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal. That's right. But how many of thousands of people being killed by illegals? To her parents, I say.
Okay, hold on. Did you get it? Chad, jump on here for a minute. Do you hear how many thousands have been killed by legal immigrants or illegal immigrants?
I was hearing illegal.
You heard illegal. I hear illegal as well. Now, I'm looking for illegal, but I don't know what the point would be if he's trying to say how many people have been killed by legal immigrants. If he's trying to say that, I don't know what the point is that he's trying to make there, because that doesn't make any sense. I mean, you can come here legally and then try and kill somebody. That doesn't really go well against your whole immigration status. So if he's trying to say that, he's going off on one of his dementia tangents, because he's gone off script. He doesn't know what to do. And he's going back to kind of an old school Joe Biden mentality where he used to be pro enforce the border, seal the border, because we have to do that. Which, if you know his politics and his policy and his history, he used to say that stuff. Now he's all about the progressive movement of open borders, shipping 300,000 illegal migrants in from airplanes, allowing 10 million over the past 3 years during his administration to come in illegally. So how, if he's saying illegal, then that demolishes every argument that they have about how they actually care about securing the border or passing an immigration bill that has any substance to it, because he's openly admitting that illegal aliens are committing crimes. And he's trying to downplay Lincoln Riley because it's just like, yeah, it's a normal thing, not a big deal. I want to play it one more time because listen to it. Does he say legal or illegal immigrants?
Lincoln Riley, an innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal. That's right. But how many of thousands of people being killed by illegals?
I swear he says how many thousands of people have been killed by illegals.
He is definitely saying illegal.
He's definitely saying illegal. So he's proving the point that the border policies that he's allowed, that has allowed 10 million illegals to come into the nation, have killed thousands of people in the country. Now, I think that number might be a little high. So even he's arguing against his point even further. The Democrats lost their minds over this.
We could always ask his press secretary to come on and answer that question.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, we'll ask Karine Jean-Pierre to come on the program and ask and be able to clarify that one. Which, by the way, he did the day after on Friday, was asked by the media, not about that specifically, but just the comment about an illegal. Because remember, they're not allowed to say illegal. That was a major failure for the Democrats in the first place. It's supposed to be undocumented worker. It's supposed to be an undocumented dreamer. It's supposed to be a dreamer in general. Those are the terms that we're supposed to use. We're not allowed to use illegal. And the Democrats, ironically, who are trying to take a conservative Republican approach on immigration, because that's the number one issue, according to all the national polls, that people are concerned about, even in, you know, states like Virginia and West Virginia, when the media was laughing about that on Super Tuesday. I can't believe that's the number one issue for these individuals all the way up here. Immigration's a major problem right now. Illegal flowing coming into the nation, kind of a problem right now. You're not allowed to say the word illegal. So they asked him about that outside of the White House on Friday to be like, did you really mean to say illegal? Because you're not supposed to say that. And he said this.
So do you regret using the word illegal to describe it?
Hold on. Just imagine that stupid question for the media. Did you really mean to say that? Do you regret saying illegal? Because they're not illegals. You're using rhetoric from the right wing nut jobs that are like conspiracy theorists and stuff.
So do you regret using the word illegal to describe immigrants last night, sir?
Well, not probably. I don't regret it. Technically not supposed to be here.
Whoa. You got me off script. As he's walking away from Air Force One or two, Air Force One, whatever he's doing. They're technically not supposed to be here. What are we doing here? That's the Biden administration taking the conservative. Remember, Democrats do this very well, and they do this at local, statewide levels and nationwide levels. They do this very well. When they're losing in an election, they realize that overall the nation is still a center right nation overall. And in order to win, sometimes they have to pretend like they're the tough talkers on a policy to get them elected. They're going to clean up governmental spending. They're going to seal the border. They're going to crack down on crime. They're going to work with law enforcement. When they were the ones that actually endorsed Antifa and endorsed Black Lives Matter and wanted to defund police and wanted the open border policies and have created the crime issue by not arresting anybody unless they've stolen $900 or $1,000 worth of goods. Like, they're the ones that created those policies. But election time, hey, we're tough on that stuff. Elect us and we'll get it fixed. He just blew the entire argument for illegal aliens and the immigration issue. Technically, they're not supposed to be here. Bye, Joe Biden, during the campaign.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. It's America's political therapist. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Darn right it is. Welcome back in. Therifying the nation, one radio program at a time, one radio listener at a time. So great to have you. So Joe Biden making a fool of himself. Now he's ruined the entire Democrat platform. The illegals are not supposed to be here, openly admitting that, which, let's go down that rabbit hole for just a moment. Let's go down that thought process. He says he needs an immigration bill to be passed in order for him to have authority to shut down the southern border if things get out of hand, to allow them to be able to properly process individuals. Like, there's no other laws on the books right now, according to him. It's only the fact that we need to pass law right now so that way he has the ability to do something. Right now, though, it's out of his hands. He's wiping his hands clean from it. It's not his fault. It's Republicans' fault for not actually addressing the issue. And he can't do anything. Can't enforce any of the laws that are currently on the books.
Andy, there's no laws on the books. That's why we need to do something. Let's go down that thought process for a minute. If they're illegal aliens, he said illegal alien at the State of the Union. He reinforced the concept of an illegal alien during the walking interview that he did with the media, saying that, well, they're not supposed to be here. What, I never thought I'd get him to admit that. That's kind of hilarious.
Do you regret using the word illegal to describe immigrants last night, sir?
Well, not probably. I don't regret it. Technically not supposed to be here.
That's hilarious. If you're not supposed to be here, what's keeping you from being here? Oh, wait a second. That would be a law. And if there's a law in the books, that means that the law's already there. I mean, it was already written by Congress at some point. It was passed by Congress at some point. And it was signed by the president at some point. It was approved by the Supreme Court at some point, you know, with our whole checks and balance systems, the three branches of government, that whole deal there. I know it's a tricky process for civics for those that don't understand that process, but it was done, which means it's already on the books, which means that's what makes them illegal, because there's a law that says they're not supposed to be there. So he already admits that they're just breaking the law, and that him as the executive branch that's supposed to be by duty of executive branch is to enforce the law. He's not doing it. And he's not doing it enough to where he openly admits that thousands of people are dying from illegals. At least that's what I heard on that step, that clip from the State of the Union, that they're breaking the law, and he's not doing anything to enforce the law to stop that from happening, which means we don't need a congressional bill. He can just do it. I know that's a rhetorical walk down memory lane here for us that agree with this. It's kind of an educational experience for those on the other side of the aisle. So I'm trying to break it down and simplify it for those that may be on the slower end of the spectrum in the back of the school bus here for a moment to actually catch up and understand what we're doing. Now, it's another reason why radio is so wonderful to be live on the weekends here, is because just on Saturday after the State of the Union, and I told you Joe Biden's not going to be heard of from for a while because he's got to recover from being injected with so much stuff to deliver that State of the Union, that he's come out with a campaign ad. And he's done it in a strange fashion. It's an interesting ad, but listen to the very end of it, because I find this kind of intriguing.
Look, I'm not a young guy. That's no secret. But here's the deal. I understand how to get things done for the American people. I led the country through the COVID crisis. Today, we have the strongest economy in the world. I passed a law that lowers prescription drug prices, caps insulin at $35 a month for seniors. For 4 years, Donald Trump tried to pass it. I got it done. Now we're rebuilding America. I passed the biggest law in history to combat climate change, because our future depends on it. Donald Trump took away the freedom of women to choose. I'm determined to make Roe v. Wade the law of the land again. Donald Trump believes the job of the president is to take care of Donald Trump. I believe the job of the president is to fight for you, the American people, and that's what I'm doing. I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
Can we do one more take?
Look, I'm very young, energetic, and handsome. What the hell am I doing this for?
Yeah, they actually, that last little bit. Can we do one more take? I'm actually young and attractive, and I know what I'm doing. That was included as part of the official campaign ad, trying to appeal to people, saying that, yeah, I'm still here. Are you trying a little hard? Hey, you might want to cover up your desperation showing just a little bit. Wayne Weingarten coming up right around the corner here on The Voice of Reason.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Truth, reason,
and common sense.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, it is. Welcome back into it. Truth, reason, common sense, rationale. That's just what we do here on the show on a daily and weekly basis, especially for our weekend program. So wonderful to have all the great radio stations that we do, and more coming on here very soon. Love you to death, broadcasting coast to coast for sure. You can always find, if you want more of the program, by the way, we do have our social media. We also have our website, and on our website, we have the link to all of our podcast sites. If you enjoy the podcast form, which we don't do a separate podcast, I do radio 6 days a week and do a lot of hours of talk radio. So if you want to hear the program or just repeat or some of the other shows that you don't hear maybe during the week in some of your markets, you can find us. It's on any of your favorite podcasting sites at The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. You can subscribe, and it's literally on all of them, Amazon and Google Play and TuneIn and wherever else you can think of for your podcast. So we dominate. And actually, really exciting news. We are just about ready to hit 100,000 downloads of the show. Wow, that's amazing. So thank you. Thank you guys very much. We appreciate it very, very much. It's a, and that number, I think, is even a little bit higher because we get downloads from sites that don't register on our host site. So I don't know exactly how many, but from the host site's perspective, from what they count, it shows we're hitting 100,000 downloads. So you guys are amazing. I cannot thank you enough. You can always find the podcast there. Also, the website, and just if you're in a market that does not have the radio show, we are coming to a city near you. I promise a lot more stations coming on board very soon. Find us all on the website at HoosierReason.com. All right, let's get into our next segment here. I was reading through this article on Fox News as California. Let's go out there for just a moment, shall we, as we look at some of these ridiculous laws being passed in certain states. California, we love you. You guys are always in the top five for download podcasts, so we don't have any stations out there yet, but you guys always pay attention. California is working really hard, and they've been doing it for a while, on the concept of trying to pass reparations. Yeah, like reparations is in, I've been a victim. There's still systematic racism in society. You owe me something. And that's been the argument that we've heard for a while. I read about being in Kansas. I read about Missouri and the university in Missouri advocating for like $300 million worth of reparations from the black community that built this college back in like the early 1800s. And they say based on the wages and the expenditures and inflation, it should be like $300 million that this university is owed. Yeah, kind of hilarious. But California's working on it themselves as well, where they've been pushing it for a while, but it seems like it's gaining some traction, where near 80% of the black population in the state of California could be owed reparations if this bill goes through. Now, I would like to reiterate that as far as I'm aware, and my next guest maybe can confirm this for me, that California was not a slave state, which means there were no actual slaves that ever lived in the state of California because it was not a slave state. So I don't know why we're passing reparations in a non-slave state when there was no slavery actually in the state. But how much is this going to cost, and what are the details as we go to our next guest here on the program?
Let's go to the Hoosier Media Hotline.
Happy to have on the program, and I think the first time for our syndicated weekend show, he's an economist with the Pacifica Research Institute. Really love that organization for sure. Mr. Wayne Weingarten with us here. Wayne, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Andy. How about yourself?
Doing great. It's so great to chat with you again. It's been a little bit. This is a wild concept. And every time I hear about a potential conversation about reparations in California, it always seems like they're upping the ante further and further and further. Now we have near 80% of the black population in California that could potentially receive reparations. And I'm assuming it's not going to be a light check that the state of California could potentially be dishing out. Talk about the details of what's going on here.
You know, we like to go out on the edge here in California. They're talking about putting a down payment on. And so one of the things we wanted to do is, well, you know, you don't put a down payment on a house without knowing what the cost of the house is. So we thought it's important, you know, fifth largest economy in the world. What are we talking about? What's the financial cost when you're saying reparations? What are you putting us on the hook for? And so there was a 1,000-page report produced looking at reparations, and they had, you know, all of these different areas where they were saying money was owed based on past actions. And when Gal Matters, which is a media organization out here, they added it up, and it came to $1.4 million per person of reparations.
Hold on. Wait a second. Say that again. How much are they going to be receiving?
Well, now, there's no bill to actually enact this, but this is what the reparations report said, $1.4 million per person.
That's fantastic. That's a lot of money. And that's for a large population.
Yeah, well, and the population that's eligible is about 2 million people. And so when you do the arithmetic on that, you come to $2.8 trillion. You were saying $300 million. And I was thinking to myself, that's chump change what we're talking about. We're talking about $2.8 trillion.
Wow. Now, what is the current debt of the state of California, or the deficit, I guess, if you want to look at it, if that's easier. But what right now, how far in the hole is the state of California? Because I know that right now they're already dealing with financial problems.
Yeah, we have, based on kind of the past budget and this budget together, the current estimate is about $75 billion hole that we have to fill. So we have $75 billion of what our current government that we can't afford, but we're going to take $2.8 trillion, which is almost three quarters of our GDP, and add that burden into the mix.
How do you pay for something like that? What do you do? I mean, obviously, it's a state is not like the federal government where you can just print more money and be like, oh, everything's fine. We'll just live under quantitative easing and just live in debt. You can't do that as a state. You have to have a balanced budget, which means my guess would be taxes would be going up and everything would become more expensive when you already have a vast majority of the population leaving the state because it's already too damn expensive.
Yeah. Well, you can't pay out $2.8 trillion in 1 year. That's just impossible. And they haven't put out, and this is, you know, one of those things, they keep talking about down payments that we're not going to, you know, have all of this at once. And they're not actually putting out a financing proposal. So they're not actually being serious or a comprehensive proposal. But what we said is, okay, wait a second. If you're going to do this, and let's say you're going to do it over 30 years, and we picked 30 years because that's, you know, like a 30-year mortgage, it would be $93 billion a year if you don't account for inflation or the fact that you're paying lots of the money way in the future. So you're going to expand the budget under that instance by one third. So you're going to basically, you have to increase taxes by 54% on the average family.
That's astronomical. Now, I'm assuming, and you could probably clarify a little bit more than this. I come from Kansas, and in Kansas, roughly 80 to 90% of our entire state budget is consumed by public education and by our state employee retirement plan, which is known as CAPERS here in Kansas. And I know most states are the same way. Illinois, when they filed bankruptcy a few years back because they couldn't afford their bills, it was 100% of their entire budget that was public education and state employee retirement plans for their state. They didn't have any room for anything else. Is California the same? And if they put on this quote unquote down payment, it sounds like essentially what they're doing is just creating another coffer for an employee retirement plan, so to speak, in that sense that they can't afford, because I'm assuming that's already the main agencies that are bankrupting the state in the first place.
Yeah, no, it's 100% right. You know, the education's a big budget. You know, we also have, Medi-Cal, which is our version of Medicaid. That's a huge, you know, cost in the budget. It's basically education, health, pensions. I mean, that takes up the vast majority of the budget. Actually, fixing roads, things, public services, that's becoming more and more degraded in terms of kind of share of the budget, which, you know, that's actually what we expect of the government. But never mind that. This would absolutely add another huge transfer payment. It would be completely kind of anti-growth. You know, we've been losing a couple hundred thousand people a year. Our guess is that would really accelerate, and you could lose up to close to 2 million people that would decide to leave. I mean, think about it. If you were in the top tax bracket, you'd be paying, including federal and state taxes, close to 60% of your money would be going to the government.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's insane. I mean,
you're talking
about ridiculous levels. Well, no. You can't do that. And right now with real estate in California, I mean, it's already so astronomical. You see homeless populations increasing, crime's already increasing. People can't afford a living because the housing is so expensive in the first place. You can't afford to buy a home. And then you see all this on top of it. There's no way you can survive in the beautiful state of California.
No, no. And it would destroy all of the different income growth, job growth, all of that would stagnate. I mean, this would be, and that's why we called it unrealistic kind of financial. It is a stagnating kind of policy, and it doesn't actually achieve the goal. And I think that's what's much more important. You know, if our goal is to actually lift people up, if our goal is to, you know, make the poor wealthier, right, that should be our goal. There's lots of ways to do that would actually achieve that goal. Transferring money has never actually lifted any kind of group out of poverty.
Yeah, no, you're right. We got just about a minute left here. We're talking with Wayne Weingarten with the Pacific Research Institute. I know this is coming out, like you mentioned, of this 1,000-page report from the Reparations Task Force in California. My question to you is, in about the last 45 seconds here, is where does the legislature and Governor Newsom stand on this? Well, I'm sure they like it. I'm sure they also admit the fact that these numbers that you just rattled off are daunting for the state to take on.
What they're going to say is, well, let's, you know, we have a budget hole, so let's just allocate $1 billion towards this as a down payment, or let's just do 0.5% of our general fund toward this. And so it kind of, what seems to be happening, a bit of a bait and switch, where you're actually saying, okay, let's have this big number out there to get people's attention, and then $1 billion sounds reasonable.
Yeah. Just throw a whole lot of money at it. And let's just, that way, I'm sure that during election season, it would be great to just buy off an entirely new generation and a whole nother demographic that they're starting to lose, by the way, in the general election. So it wouldn't put it past them to try and ram this through. Wayne, it's great to talk to you, my friend. We're out of time. Go check them out. PacificResearch.org is the website. Keep up the fight. Keep us posted on this. Let's get you back on the show again real soon.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Hey, appreciate it very much. There it is. All right, got to take a break. One more segment around the corner to wrap up hour number one for your weekend edition of The Voice of Reason. Stay right here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Where Hoosierholics gather every week. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Darn right it is. A couple of minutes left here for hour number one. Thanks again to Wayne Weingarten, Pacific Research Institute, coming on the show. Fascinating conversation out of the great state of California. Look, I love California. Beautiful area. I have been to California one time in college. I went to the Reagan Ranch, actually, through the Young Americas. What was at that point the Young Americas Foundation? I think now it's changed to like Young Americans for Liberty or something. So they've changed a little bit, but I went out there to the Reagan Ranch for a convention when I was in college, part of the College Republicans movement, and I was in Santa Barbara, California. Beautiful area. I saw the beach. I saw the 5-star hotel that we were in. It was a little expensive, and I was like, this is out of my league. I've never been around that type of high-classy stuff because I'm from the middle of the country. I'm from Ohio. I'm from Colorado. I'm from Kansas. I'm not part of that elite crowd, per se. So I was a little uncomfortable being there. And while I looked around and I was like, wow, this is beautiful, but everything kind of looks fake. Not to mention, I mean, I don't know. It's almost like Vegas, where it's like, it's really cool, but it's fake. It's not real. And I took a while to adjust, but it's a beautiful area. California is an amazing state. And it breaks my heart that such a state's being destroyed by so many progressives and that so many people are okay with it. And the ones that aren't okay with it leave, but they're still kind of like Californicated. And they go to another state and then they kind of like bring the California policies to there. And then they do the same thing. It's a weird concept. And I don't know why, instead of actually just allowing the state to change and actually be Republican. For the first time, by the way, California, all eyes are on you. That open seat from Dianne Feinstein when she passed away while in office, because that's apparently what we do now, is just stay in office until we die, even when we can't really do the job that we're supposed to do. It is down to a decent Republican and a not so decent Democrat. So be aware of that, because all eyes are on you for that Senate race. I am very optimistic this election in 2024 is going to allow the Republicans to flip the Senate. And that's going to be one of the seats where, for the first time in a very long time, a celebrity, what was he, a football player, a baseball player, a very big celebrity in California, running as a Republican to take on Adam Schiff, the House member that's trying to flip over to the Senate. And for those that remember who Adam Schiff is, he's the guy that led the impeachment trial against Donald Trump in the House for the colluding with Russia, when we knew that was complete farce and not true. So that is a major race, and I am optimistic that we can win because the polls show it's relatively close. So Californians, we talk about on the show the local activism, the catalyst for you to be that change. Don't trust the state Republican Party. I mean, trust them, but I mean, don't rely all them on to solve the issue. Don't rely on other people. You can do it yourself. Go out, make the phone calls, knock on the doors, make sure you get out and vote. And let's make this happen, man. Let's make it happen, because you guys are on it. And Democrats, all they have right now is to buy people off. That's all they have. You saw it. Immigration issue and the economy and every other major policy program failing miserably. Joe Biden completely just abandoned the Bidenomics concept on the campaign trail, because now it's in investing in America. We're going to go around the country and talk about how much we've invested in this and invested in that. And you get money and you get money and you get money. And that's the whole campaign right now. And while that seems nice and Democrats are all giddy about it, at the end of the day, you still go to the grocery store and you're like, wow, this is really expensive. So I don't know exactly how that's going to resonate with the voters. At the same time, right now, they're trying to just buy everybody off. Student loan forgiveness for my generation, the reparations issue for minority votes, because they're losing them. And I've said this so many times before, the black vote's upset because they've gotten all this stuff for so long, and yet the opportunities have not gotten any better while they claim systematic racism that's been caused by the Democrats while they keep the glass ceiling on their head. The Hispanic vote's getting upset with Donald Trump because he's allowing the open borders and the cartels to come in, which is what they got away from in the first place when they came here. You have the Muslim population that's really upset with Joe Biden. In fact, Super Tuesday that we saw was a complete devastation for Joe Biden when 45,000 Muslims did not show up to vote and actually turned out to vote undecided or unnamed or unknown in the race, which is a major blow to him because that's about the majority that he won in the general election in Trump in 2020 against Trump. Between Minnesota and Michigan, now Donald Trump's in play in those states because the Muslim population's really upset. The Jewish population's also upset because he's not standing firm with Israel long enough. So he's getting it from all around, and the only thing they know how to do is to buy the votes. Let me give you something else. Let me bail out the student loans and wipe them off the face of the earth, a.k.a. subsidize it and make everybody pay for it by consuming it into the federal debt that's already out of control. It's increasing $1 trillion every 100 days, $3 trillion in a year almost because of how much we're spending. Let's just consume that more. Let's do reparations. Let's just buy off everybody and hope that they'll vote for us. You might want to cover up the desperation showing. We got hour number two of the Voice Reason coming up right around the corner. Got so much more to talk about. Where are we at with the appropriations bills and a federal budget? We'll do that when we come back in hour number two. It's the Voice Reason. Lots more to get to. Stay here.